Hello and welcome to another episode of Football Furioso, Soccer at the Speed of Sound. I am your host, Norris Howard, joined as always by my blood brother, Nolan, the wing back. What's up, bro?
Well, I tell you what's not up. The standings right now is all over the place. There were slip-ups.
There were massive slip-ups, movement at the top and the bottom of the table. Things are going crazy. And first of all, I got to address something right quick. We did take a week off. That was not my intention. I was supposed to do a solo episode, but actually just fell off. I was on a plane when we were supposed to be recording the episode. I went to New York for a few days just to get a change of locale.
Yeah.
And much love out to all the Gooners out there, the Manhattan Gooners who played host to me while I was out there to watch the Champions League match. Great, great, great atmosphere. Great time up there in the Bowery, as it were, for that match. And it was a fantastic atmosphere. I just want to say, moving forward, talking very quickly about the Champions League, pretty much everything is still up in the air. We're going to talk more about it in the next show as everything gets completed up. But we are going to have to start, this week with some craziness in the Premier League. First, we're going to start with the former league leaders, Liverpool, losing 1-0 at home to Crystal Palace.
Mm.
Nolan, how does this happen?
Well, what happens is you go into a match not starting. They did not come out of the blocks well. Honestly, it's the easiest way to say it.
And this is the second time this happened, because that actually is the same thing that happened to them against Brighton in the Premier League match previous to this. Let an early goal go in. They were able to battle back. But this was different.
Yeah, it was different because Crystal Palace honestly had an idea. They came out and said, hey, we're really close in the relegation battle. We can't just look at Liverpool and say, let's take an L and get out of here. They said, why not fight for these last six matches for our relegation life? So you saw, they kind of saw Liverpool coming out slow. They attacked, and you watched the forward line stay far forward enough. They stayed at the half line and allowed those breaks to happen. And eventually they did break with Eze in a 14th minute goal early on.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I will say about this match and really about also the match they had in midweek against Atalanta in Europa League, Liverpool has 70% possession in this game. They also had more possession in the Atalanta game. You have to start saying, maybe the way you beat Liverpool is just let them have the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They can't feed off the chaos. Luis Diaz and Nunez can't, you know, get in behind the defenders and wreak havoc that way. I think the specter of Diogo Jota looms over this team, and he's an incredibly clinical finisher. He does not need a lot of chances to put the ball in the net. And they fall to third because of this loss. And, you know, I honestly think, Nolan, you know, does this really damage Liverpool's chances of having the fairy tale ending for Jurgen Klopp?
I hate to say it, but yes. I think that this is going to be a start of a slight cascade down a little bit. I think that they'll drop a few more points before it's all
more
said
than Arsenal, you think?
I think so. I think they'll drop points against one or two more teams. I think only because it's a mentality thing. You know, they haven't lost at home since October of 2022. So
wow,
naturally,
really?
Yeah, in the Premier League, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so since October 22, they haven't lost at home. So I just feel like you start to look at yourself and say, maybe we aren't so imperious. You go out there, now you're second-guessing yourself. Again, like you said, having all the possession, we still lose matches. You start to, you know, second-guess, and that's, you know, other teams are going to be looking at them and saying, we can get something out of them. And I think that that's their problem. They know that. They know teams are not looking at Liverpool and saying, let's batten down the hatches. Let's just sit back. They're thinking, let's do that and counter them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I agree with you. And I think more so because of the injuries. I mentioned Jota and a few other injuries. I just feel like Liverpool this was like ready to happen. Mm-hmm. Like this was the thing. The house of cards was set up to tumble when it came to Liverpool. Because when you look at the health of Man City's team, when you look at Arsenal, they're getting players back at this point of the season, which is always what you want. They were going to struggle to maintain that pace. And I agree with you. I think that they are in the most trouble of falling away. I don't see how they continue to just win out. And even if they do, if everything holds, they don't win the title. Mm-hmm. Manchester City does. So, you know, it's I think it's very disappointing for Liverpool fans to see, considering the manner of which they lost at home. But at the same time, I also feel like if you watch Liverpool week after week after week after week, you can't win championships that way. You can't win championships going down early and then, you know, hoping you could fight back in the 80th, 90th, 110th minute. You can't. You can't do it. It's not sustainable. It's draining. It physically, it's draining emotionally. And I think, you know, where we are with Liverpool right now is honestly mid-season. I had them third, and that's kind of where I have them to finish the season now.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that some of the matches they have, like end of April, early May, they go to West Ham, then they face Tottenham, then they go to Villa. That's a 3-week stretch.
That's really tough.
Yeah. And West Ham aren't going to roll over. Yeah. They're not going to roll over. So,
yeah. And you know, and West Ham is weird in that sense, because I feel like, man, West Ham may just like, you may be playing half a team, and then the other week you could be playing a team that's like, why are they not in Europe? Like, you know, so yeah, that's going to be really tough. Moving forward to the other disappointment of the week, Arsenal dropped points to Aston Villa at home 2-0. This was a match that, honestly, I will say, felt like what it should have felt like. It felt like a match that teetered on a knife's edge, that you had, you know, at the time, 2-4, which is definitely not the same as Liverpool playing Crystal Palace, but you had 2-4. Villa, who seemed to have the rubric on how to properly play against Arteta's Arsenal. And they would end up winning 2-0. Those would be two late goals. The goal started by Leon Bailey and then followed up very quickly by Ollie Watkins. And Villa would take all 3 points from the Emirates. And so, Nolan, you know, looking at this, I mean, what does this spell for the rest of Arsenal season?
It's so tough for Arsenal because we knew going into this, they had the toughest run out of all the teams, I think, given from that point, 7-8 matches to the end of the season. I just think that it's going to be tough for them to come back. I don't see them dropping as many points as Liverpool. I think that they'll show up most of the time. Again, 2-4. I can't hold too much. I think we both felt a draw would have been more inclined with what we thought prior to the match. But I don't see Arsenal losing their mental over this. I see them just refocusing, getting back in and just dominating, hopefully, their remaining games. But I got to give credit to Villa, though. I think that Villa.
Yeah.
I give credit.
And Unai Emery in particular.
Yes, because it was 0-0 for most of the match. Arsenal had great chances. You know, you watched a lot of, you know, clearances on the line, good goalkeeping, defending. Saka had chances. Kai Havertz had a good match of just getting behind. And then Villa just said, you know what, we can get some out of this and score 2 goals. And I think I know where we got to go next, though. And I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay.
Zinchenko had arguably the worst man of the match.
It's you know, I don't like to pick on players. Not often. I really don't. I really don't. And definitely not players of the teams I support. I really, really don't like to do that. But at some point, I think Arteta has to look at not just Zinchenko. I think he has to look at Jesus as well and say, what are we getting from these guys? Because Jesus, great last season, pretty good at the start of this season, can't stay healthy. All right, might as well not have that player. Zinchenko, sure, he's got talent on the ball and he can unlock defense as well. Where was that in this match? And then also, the defensive liabilities. When you look at the form that Arsenal were in at the start of 2024, of this calendar year, Jesus was hurt and Zinchenko was not starting. And they scored the most goals they had ever scored in that period of time. And they had let in the least amount of goals that they had ever let in over that period of time. So I understand you got Champions League coming up and all that good stuff, but why are you messing with the formula at this point? And I think that's a question for Arteta. But Zinchenko got spun around and there was some nervy moments from him. And I just think his confidence in that position, I just think you can't keep doing it anymore. I think that's why you brought in Jurrien Timber to play in that position. And, you know, unfortunately, he got hurt. But, you know, Arsenal, this was going to be this was going to be the tough part of the season, is can they hold? And unfortunately, they were unable to. And honestly, I think Leandro Trossard had a good sight at goal and didn't bury his chance either, which is unlike him. But also, I think in this team, he's not a starter. I think he is significantly better off the bench.
Right.
So I think, understand juggling Champions League alongside the Premier League right now for Arsenal, but I think it just proves that Arsenal's squad depth is right there. It's right there, but not quite. Mm-hmm. It's not quite where City is. And speaking of City, they just brush Luton aside. I mean, this was not even a competition.
5-1. I mean, I feel like almost as a viewer, I wouldn't even be surprised. Anytime you bring up City, you're thinking blowout unless it's the top three teams. The thing with City, they just hit their stride every year. Now, I get it. It's Luton. I know they're in a relegation battle. But I mean, they literally just brush them aside. And I mean, Haaland looked like he was just strolling out there, you know.
League two player, Erling Haaland.
Oh.
League two player, Erling Haaland. I'm going to pull this to the side right quick. I get what, so if you didn't hear a lot of the pundits in England, you know, Keane and all the rest of them were saying like, who else? Carragher was saying, I don't think that Haaland is that good of a quality of a footballer. He's a great striker, but he's not a good footballer. Shut up. Manchester City don't need him to be a footballer. They've won the treble with him being just a striker. What are you talking about? And it just goes to show the foolishness of some of these pundits. Mm-hmm. Because I guarantee you, if that was Harry Kane, they'd be slobbing all over him.
Yeah.
Straight up.
No, it's true. They called him an ultimate luxury footballer. I find that insane.
That's ridiculous.
Given that he does his job. Like, there have been so many players that does what Haaland has does in the Premier League. But now since it is Haaland, he's a League Two player.
He League Two. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. In the league that they used to complain, there's no number nines. There's no old number nines. Everybody's a hybrid winger. Everybody's a false nine. There's no number. The most purest of number nines strolls in, and just because he's a Norwegian, which, by the way, Erling Haaland was born in England.
Yeah.
His
father played there.
Actually, legally an Englishman.
Yeah, his father played for an English team.
That's what I'm saying. He is legally an Englishman, and yet because he didn't quote-unquote grow up there, because he decided to play for Norway, because he decided to do this, he a luxury player now. This man has won everything that there is to win in terms of club competitions. Come on, y'all.
Do you think they're trying to play behind the back there, like Liverpool, trying to play into the minds of Haaland, make him second guess himself?
That's not, it's stupid. It's, it's a bad idea. It's silly. It's dumb. And I get what they're trying to say. Oh, he doesn't necessarily have the technical skill of some of the other players and strikers in the league. But guess what? When you win in the way they win in, it don't matter.
It don't matter.
It don't matter. He could be that player. But anyway, they brush aside Luton Town, which is what they should have did. And now they look forward to a series of interesting matches. I don't want to call them easy. I'll call them interesting matches. Because in the Premier League, they'll have Brighton coming up. They got a long break, actually, in the Premier League because they have both Champions League and the FA Cup semifinals. So they actually won't be playing again in the league until April 25th. So there is a chance that they could be back in third with a game in hand by the time they play Brighton on April 25th. But they got an easy run in until they see Tottenham in May. Nolan, how do you feel about City? Because I don't see any of these teams doing anything to them.
No, I mean, they have Forest in there mixed in. Wolves are starting to go on a downtick. Fulham, they've been scrappy a little bit.
Fulham might be able to pull a rabbit out the hat.
They're at Fulham as well.
Okay, at Craven Cottage. Mm-hmm. See, that's interesting. That could be an interesting match because Fulham is the type of team that they just turn up sometimes and take it to some of the big boys. So that's going to be interesting. And then, obviously, A lot is riding on the Tottenham match.
Oh, yeah.
As Tottenham has been Pep's boogeyman for the past few seasons. So even if they just take a point from that, that'd be huge in terms of the title race. And so, you know, Nolan, is this City's to lose again?
Absolutely.
Ah, this is...
Absolutely. They would have to quite literally draw, you know, a couple or even lose a match at this point. I don't see that happening.
I don't either. I don't either. And, you know, here we are again.
Is this, what, fourth straight possibly?
Fourth straight. Here we are again. Here we are again. It's hard to feel like the season is been tossed away, but it just feels like with both Liverpool and Arsenal losing the same week.
I mean, is Pep, if Pep does this, is he arguably the greatest coach, quote unquote? If he even gets close to another treble, back-to-back treble.
It's hard to say. I mean, I rate him. I would say so. But also at the same time, he has never really taken a lesser team and made them better. He's always kind of walked into ultra teams. Mm-hmm. Like, he walked into Barcelona when Messi was first becoming Messi, when Xavi was there. Iniesta built that team. You know, Pique, Puyol, you know, built that team in his image and created arguably what is the blueprint for possession-based football, right? Okay. He goes to Bayern. It's Bayern.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're not really spoiled for choice at Bayern. And then he goes to Manchester City where they basically write him a blank check. So, is he great in terms of winning? Yes. But I think there are other managers who have accomplished more with significantly less. And I think that's the only kind of argument you could have against Pep. It's kind of like Phil Jackson.
Right.
You know, is Phil Jackson the GOAT coach? Many people would say yes, but also Phil Jackson never really had a team that sucked.
That's true.
It made them like great.
Yeah, no, I think if he were to even win the treble this year, I think
for he wins the treble both times, he'd go.
That's all I'm gonna say. I will submit it. But let's say he wins the league, you know, wins the FA Cup, cool, right? Even in my mind, though, when I look at Pep, I think there's gonna be something where he's gonna get his flowers later because he's such a just chaotic man right now.
Yeah,
like once he starts to slow down, maybe leave the game or something. I think that's when he'll really get his flowers as a coach because he really cares. I think that's the one part I love about Pep.
Oh, yeah,
he
man.
Cares. And there are managers that are just good. Tactically, go out there and do this. Cool. Pep is like out there slapping his players. Come on. That's what I'm talking
well,
about.
Well, we can't.
6-0.
Yeah, we can't deny his impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We can't. I mean, just look at it. You know what I'm saying? You literally look at it when the two best teams are the Premier League are Pep and Pep Jr. Like, as much as I love Arteta, there's a direct through line, and there's a direct through line. You know, Xavi is now at Barcelona. He won the league last year. Who is still alive in the Champions League campaign. There's so many people who come out of the so-called school of Pep. You know, Vincent Kompany, obviously, we're talking about Burnley, who aren't doing well, but Vincent Kompany, a manager who comes out of the school of Pep. And when you looked at how Burnley played in the championship, it was how Pep would play. It was very possession-based. Dynamism, all players know how to function on the ball, total football kind of situation. So, you know, it's we're never going to be able to deny the impact of Pep. But will we call Pep the GOAT? I don't know. I probably would, but I could see some people not. But anyway, as we move forward, Newcastle completely destroy Tottenham Hotspur at St. James's Park in one of the worst defensive showings I think we have ever seen in this calendar year from a Premier League team. I'm just being completely honest. I'm not saying this with any bias whatsoever. When you watch that match in its entirety, definitely for that first half, Spurs had no clue what the hell was going on.
Yeah, and if you watch Newcastle, they were licking their chops. You could see them saying, we know how Spurs are going to play. Let's go out there and do this. And that's exactly what happened. And they knew Spurs weren't going to change their tactic either. So you watched Anthony Gordon, you watched Isak just drive through the middle, knowing that the through ball would come through, knowing Spurs were going to press up so high. So 4-0 isn't surprising. It's Newcastle that did it. It's a little surprising for right now, but I'm not surprised that second shoe finally dropped for Spurs. I mean, this is the lowest it can get for that type of, you know, the Postecoglou, the way he plays.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, you know, everybody was talking about Van de Ven having such a howler of a game, but I don't necessarily want to just blame him solely. I think a lot of this falls on the midfield. A lot of it falls on Madison for not tracking back and the rest of the midfield not necessarily doing their part. Because if you look at particularly the first two goals, well, the first goal is just they got exposed. The second goal is just like a really awful back pass that, like, why is that? Why even attempt that back pass? And so he's put in these really terrible positions that, like, one-on-one, you always favor the attacker. Mm-hmm. I always will favor the attacker one-on-one. And it just feels like that's the missing link for Spurs. If I had to say, okay, why are Spurs not firmly fourth? Is because they're great going forward, but they don't have that player who's going to sit and break up play in transition before the back line gets exposed.
Yeah. No, I can agree there.
Yeah. So moving through the rest of the results, Bournemouth draw Manchester United 2-2. Put some respect on Solanke's name. He's a quality guy, quality striker, but Manchester United continue to underwhelm. It is a shock that they are even still where they are, contending for Europa League spot.
They're seventh now, though.
Yeah, but they do drop now behind Newcastle, and if they don't keep it up, they will be out of European contention. Nottingham Forest draw the Wolves 2-2. Burnley draw to Brighton, who are struggling on form. Brighton, they need a win desperately. Fulham, as we talked about earlier, they win against West Ham 2-0. Brentford get a much-needed win against Sheffield 2-0. And Chelsea.
Money finally came.
Cole Palmer.
Four goals. Tied with Haaland.
Golden sombrero. What a kid.
I don't even know what to say.
What a kid, man. He's great.
I mean, he has 20 goals and arguably the best celebration right now.
If you take away, he does have a great celebration. If you take away his goals, Chelsea are like in relegation form.
100%.
Like, Cole Palmer is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Word to St. Kitts.
Yeah.
Like,
if this one thing give Chelsea, that pickup was excellent. And honestly, I think it was better for Cole Palmer. He'll probably have a better career. Yeah.
I think so too. And I think even if he doesn't, because I don't think, I mean, first of all, I think if they're smart, you throw the bag at him and keep him at Chelsea as long as humanly possible. I don't think that'll happen. I think when you look at Chelsea and where they are, some of those players will get poached. Mm-hmm. I think Cole Palmer, City might want him back for the end of it all. But I think he's in a great spot right now in terms of his personal development. I think playing in a team that has lower expectations, isn't expected to necessarily make it into Europe, isn't expected to challenge for the title. It was great because he could go out there and play with not much pressure. Sure, there's a lot of banter with Chelsea, but he just needs to go out and perform, and that's what he did against Everton today.
Yeah, and I'll add on to it. I feel like this was one of those random performances. I know it's Everton, but you saw the youth come through where they used their legs. They said, we have the better players. We're younger. Let's run out to the ball. And you watched Everton never get into the match. I think that's important for them because as they win the ball, their confidence grows. So then as soon as they win the ball, you're watching Mudryk run as fast as he can forward. Madueke get out wide. You watch Cole Palmer get in those positions to shoot and score these goals. And you're watching the chaos because of how young they are. Like, Cole Palmer got a header go in the middle of the box. Like, he's just all over the place. So I think that's the key going forward is the youth. Like, let them play freely. Like, I know they give up goals and it's just Everton, but that was the key in City match where they tied 3-3, was just getting forward and not being afraid. So
yeah, no, I mean, this is hard facts. And I think, you know, I just don't rate Pochettino tactically. So I think this is another one of those games that just kind of paper over some really large cracks in the in the Chelsea team. But on the case of Everton, relegate them. I'm serious. Like, you know, the multiple financial breaches, which is not the fault of the players. It's not the fault of the coach. It is the fault of the front office. Send them down. Sit them down, man, because this is the quality of football that Everton are going to get, and the people of Liverpool are going to get out of Everton. This don't belong in the Premier League.
No.
And honestly, you know, I read a couple places, obviously, in some subreddits and some other places. You know, when are we going to talk about Sean Dyche? And when are we going to say this is as high as he can take you as a manager, right? Because when we look at what he's done, okay.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He's just, is he the new Big Sam? Is he the guy who just might keep you from getting relegated?
I think so.
That's whack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and if you look at Everton too, to piggyback off what you said, they have Forest next week, one below them. Only a couple points off.
A six-pointer.
So if they lose that match at home, relegate them. I'm done with them.
They
just
done.
Just relegate them. Because then they have Liverpool next.
Yeah. And if you told me, like, oh, man, if you had to pick between, like, Forest, Everton, and Luton, who do you pick? Luton.
Luton.
Keep them in the league. Luton.
Because
1,000 times.
And whichever championship teams come up are going to play just like Luton, probably.
That's what I want.
I would love 4 Lutons.
Oh, man. Like,
Leicester's coming up.
Leicester's coming up. It looks like Ipswich is coming up. Who else is down there? I think it's Leicester and Ipswich, I know for a fact, that are in the mix.
Yeah.
But it's tight in
Leeds
the
Leeds and Southampton.
See, out Leeds can stay there.
Yeah.
But definitely Ipswich and Leicester are going to come back and come back hard. So I'd rather if Luton can still stay around. Man,
would be crazy.
What a phenomenal Premier League season next year would be.
Yes.
You know, because to me, you know, Sheffield and Burnley have been so abjectly bad that I would love it if, like, we really truly had, like, six teams where we just, like, 4 points between. Like, we have no clue what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the table. But anyway, we're going to take a break after a very lengthy part one. And in part two, we're going to talk about Bayer Leverkusen and their historic win as they clutch the Bundesliga championship. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Football Furioso Soccer at the Speed of Sound. Your host, Norris Howard, joined as always by Nolan, the wing back. And you know, I just want to say this, right? The season is not over yet, but it's looking like Bayer Leverkusen are going to finally do it and go for the unbeaten season. But they have clutched the first title win in club history, and let me tell you, if you want to see some emotional stuff, go and watch the celebrations of that match. I mean, the last 20 minutes of the match are chaos.
They arguably were already on the pitch.
They were chaos. Like, Florian Wirtz scores a hat trick. The second goal, first of all, banger goals.
Bangers.
They win, what, 5-0?
Yeah.
Right? Banger goals. Granit Xhaka hits one from outside the box. Florian Wirtz scoring from all over the place. So by the 65th minute, the whole stadium knows the title is theirs. And Florian Wirtz scores his second goal. Half the stadium just storms the pitch.
Already on the pitch, yeah. They're
it's
just
crazy.
On the sidelines. And Florian Wirtz is like, please, wait, stop. Like, he scores a banger, and then he can't even be excited because he's literally a fan is already in his face. He's like, wait, there's like 8 minutes left.
Yeah, he's like, please, everybody, wait. But, I mean, they had to call it right at 90 minutes because, you know, folks were already storming the pitch. I mean, and this is the stuff that when we talk about love for clubs, when we talk about love for your team, and we talk about the history of football, and we talk about how it is insane to think a club that has been around for as long as Leverkusen has never won the Bundesliga championship, and they did it. They finally did it, man.
Yeah, and I'm willing to go out on a limb and say this, especially given like what you said, watching the scenes at the end of this. I would actually love to see Bayer Leverkusen stay on this world stage. Obviously, they're getting Champions League, but that stadium, those fans, I think they honestly should enjoy this for a couple of years. I would love to see them around because, you know, if Xabi Alonso stays as well, I mean, that could be another team pushing into that echelon to stay with those top teams. Like, yeah. I would love for them to stay around.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think the Bundesliga has been crying out for parity for a long time. I it's been a two-horse race for so long in Germany. And even just adding one more team to the mix is just so much better for the league. Because you talk about Germany and basically you get the Champions League and it's like, all right, Dortmund and Bayern, Dortmund and Bayern, round of 16, Dortmund and Bayern, round of 8, Dortmund and Bayern. Then maybe by the semifinals, one of them drops off. It's probably Bayern is still around. Like, it just, it makes Germany so predictable from a competitive point of view. And this is huge for the league. Huge. And Xabi Alonso has to be a shoe-in for coach of the season for UEFA, all the UEFA awards, because what he's done there is phenomenal. Because before him, they were potentially going to get relegated.
Right.
And now look what they've done. It's amazing. It's nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, and I mean, they scored 74 goals and only conceded 19 so far.
Word to Jonathan Tah the rest of the back line.
19 goals in 5-6 months.
That's ridiculous.
It's insane.
That is ridiculous.
And to your credit, like you said a couple weeks ago, Florian Wirtz is almost world class now.
Ain't no almost.
I mean, he's arguably world class conversation.
Ain't no almost. The only argument I can say is he is playing in Germany. That's exactly. It. That's it. But other than that,
I mean, he's only going to accept the biggest bag. that's where he arguably is going to be the biggest bag chaser this fall.
Yeah, and they're going to have to do a lot to keep him too. But I think he'll stay. And I think, you know, when you look at situations like this, when you can provide that for your team, right? Because I've always said it. Listen, the moment Spurs eventually win a major trophy, like even if it's just the FA Cup, like, they're going to lose their minds. They're going to lose their minds, right? That's true. But don't let them win the league, right? Or win Champions League. They will lose it. And it would be deserved because they've gone a long time without anything to be happy about. And that's the same for Leverkusen. So looking at this, I think it's amazing. I think the more teams we can have on the world stage, the better. I think when you look at all of the major top leagues, that's the issue with France right now. You know, everybody talked about France is just a one-team league. Okay, well, there's so much money flowing into the sport right now that other teams are going to emerge and more talent is going to emerge and more coaches are going to emerge because that's just the nature of things going on. And outside of your 10 to 12 sort of storied permanent fixtures, we will see this happen again in other leagues. We will see this happen again. You think about it, and I was telling a friend of mine this the other day, Manchester City this time a decade ago was a non-factor. A non-factor in terms of international football, right? Because I think the league win was, what, 2012, right? So, okay, they won that league, phenomenal, excellent, you know, all that good stuff, right? But we talk about, you know, who they are as a team on a global scale. Man, they ain't wasn't nobody checking for Manchester City. Mm-hmm. And now look what they are now, you know, the money notwithstanding. But just the players still got to go out and play. The players still got to go out and play and win.
Right.
Look at where they are now and who they are now, right? Spurs, 20 years ago, non-factor on the European stage and getting the Champions League finals and all this other stuff. This happens all the time, and it's just nice to see it finally happen in Germany.
Yeah, and I'm just happy that, you know, we're going to get that extra life into the Champions League next season, like a completely fresh team, not a team that's in there sometimes out for 2 years. Like Bayer Leverkusen aren't going to come in there again. I think they've missed like the last 2 or 3 years. They were there, I think, like in 2019, but
not this team.
Yes,
like this iteration of players.
No one is going to want to play Bayer Leverkusen if they're like this.
Hell no.
That's my point. This is a powerful team.
No. I think you got to put him in the elite. Mm-hmm. Like, if like playing at this level, you got to put him in the teams like we don't want to see City. I mean, it's the same thing, I think, for Arsenal at this point now, where I think a lot of teams don't want to see Arsenal. Mm-hmm. They do not want to see Arsenal in European football, you know, unless you're another elite team of the Bayern, Real Madrid, PSG, all the rest of them type of teams. If you're like a middle of the road Champions League squad, if you're Sociedad, mm-hmm. if you're... You know, no Dez on Sociedad.
I don't, well, like Lons.
Yeah, Lons or Sevilla or, you know, Newcastle. Like, you ain't trying to see.
No.
You ain't trying to see Leverkusen. Hell no.
Yeah, they're just a different level right now, and I'm happy to see the scenes. I arguably would say that not only were they celebrating themselves, they were celebrating Bayern losing.
Yes, it's double sweet. It is so. double sweet. And honestly, even though he played for Liverpool for many years and Real Madrid for many years, I've always rated Xabi Alonso as a quality player. He's always been a player that I've loved. And to see him kind of transition that into fantastic coaching is another, you know, a little bit of icing on the cake. But that's going to be that for this week's show. Nolan, as usual, you get the last word.
So Harry Kane and Granit Xhaka both left North London this past season. Only one of them has a title. Mr. Granit Xhaka.
Let's talk about it.
Congratulations.
Let's talk about it.